Today's scripture reading is from the book of Genesis, chapter 28, verses 10 through 17. Jacob left Beersheba and walked toward Haran. He came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And as he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring. And your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth. And you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. Then Jacob woke up from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
A few weeks ago, we started with the creation story, and then we heard about Noah and the ark. Then we went to the patriarchs, Abraham 2 weeks ago, and then Abraham and Sarah, I should say, and then Isaac and Rebekah last week. And so now we move forward to the next part of the story. But we begin with the idea that Isaac and Rebekah took 20 years to have kids. But when they finally started having children, they came two at a time. Now, you would say, well, you can't have two at a time. They got to come out one at a time. But Jacob would argue with you that they really did come out two at a time. As a matter of fact, he was holding on to his brother Esau's foot as he came out the window, whatever you want to say, there. I always get in trouble. Why is this on Facebook when I do these things? I don't know. When they came out, and so Jacob would say, we tied here. We were connected. We were one as we came out. But the truth is that Esau was the firstborn. Now, Esau was he came out hairy. I don't know how else to say that. He just had hair from head to toe, red hair. He was, from that time on, he was actually, as a matter of fact, the testosterone kid. He was the one who loved to go hunting. He loved being outside. He loved doing all those testosterone kind of things. And it was just who he was. And Isaac, his father, loved him because of the way he acted. Now, on the other hand, Jacob was just the opposite. He came out with not a hair on him. You know, he was just bare and bald as he could be. And then the rest of his life, he kind of lived that way too. He was a quiet young man. He loved to be intense. And he was just different from Esau. Esau, as it turns out, was a guy that when he thought of something, he thought with his hands and his stomach, if you know what I mean. It was his stomach that drove him to every other decision that he made. And Jacob, on the other hand, was a guy that used his brain and his logic. And he was always a little bit shady with some of his thinking, but it was always to his advantage, whatever he thought of, as a matter of fact. You know what I mean? So that's the way the two boys were. When they got to be young adults, somewhere in there, one day Esau went out hunting. Jacob stayed home and made a pot of stew. That was the normal day. But on this particular day, Esau, when he went out hunting, he couldn't find anything to catch. There was nothing there at all. And so when he came home, he was famished. There was nothing for him to eat. And at the same time, he could smell Jacob's pot of stew coming out of that smell coming out of Jacob's tent. And so it was Esau's stomach that led him to Jacob's stew. Walked in the door of the tent, said to Jacob, Jacob, I've been out hunting, I haven't found a thing, I am famished, I need something to eat, could you let me just have a bowl of your stew, it smells so good, that red stuff you're cooking looks really good. And Jacob, thinking with his brain and knowing that he didn't really like the idea that everybody said that Esau was the firstborn, you know, all through their lives it always had been Esau's the firstborn, Esau has the birthright, Esau's going to get the blessing, he's going to get the family farm, Jacob gets nothing. Jacob saying, but we were together, I was holding on to his foot, it should be the same, should be equal somehow. So Jacob said, all right, Esau, I'll let you have a little pot of stew here, bowl of stew, but you have to sell me your birthright. And of course, it was then Esau's stomach that was talking, saying, well, I'm going to die if I don't get something to eat. I'm going to starve to death. So what good is my birthright if I'm dead? So sure, you can have my birthright. I don't want it anyway. They made the deal. Esau got his stew. Jacob got the birthright. Now, it never quite explains this in the Bible about how this ends up working out, but it would appear at least that Jacob and Esau knew the birthright had been exchanged, but as far as the blessing was concerned, it was going to come from Isaac. It appears that Isaac still thought it belonged to Esau because Esau was his favorite son, as a matter of fact, and besides being the firstborn. So later on, as Esau got older, he began to go blind, and he realized he was going to have to give his blessing to his son Esau soon. He called him into the tent one day and said, Esau, go out, go hunting, get us some food, bring it back, prepare it, bring it in here, and then I will give you the blessing that came to me from Abraham and that now I have and that I will give to you, so it will go from Abraham to Isaac to Esau. Esau was really excited about that, thought that was a great idea, so he headed out and went hunting, and he was gone for a while, but as it turns out, Rebekah was listening to that conversation, and Rebekah had always loved Jacob the most. He was the one who was around her the most, I suppose, and she thought Jacob really ought to be the one to get the blessing. Now, there's a little other piece of this. I mean, Esau had gone off and gotten married to a woman that just drove the family crazy. Nobody liked her. She was causing trouble all the time, and Rebekah had this idea that he had sold his birthright to Jacob, and so did he really deserve to be the one to get the blessing? I mean, for us, really, would we want Esau to be the one blessed by God when he was willing to sell it for a bowl of stew? It looks like he was the wrong person in the first place. On the other hand, Jacob was the one that always wanted it, always wanted it to be his, always thought it should have belonged to him. He was the one always striving for it, looking for it, seeking out that blessing. Seems like the right guy, as it turns out. And that's what Rebekah thought. So she said, Jacob, why don't you go to the livestock, kill a couple of sheep, bring them back in, prepare them for food, and we'll send you in, and you can pretend like you're Esau. Jacob said, well, that's not going to work. I don't sound like Esau when I come in the door and say that I'm Esau. Besides that, I don't have hair like him. I don't smell like him. Dad's going to listen to me saying I'm Esau, and he said, you're not Esau, you're Jacob, and he's going to feel me, and I'm going to have this smooth skin. His mom said, don't worry about it. If it's a blessing, if it's a curse, it'll be a curse on me. We'll make it a blessing. Go do what I tell you to do. So Jacob did. Went out and got the food. It's kind of interesting. All he had to do to get food was to go to the livestock they already had. Esau wasn't smart enough to know he didn't have to go hunting. He could have just gotten it there. But Jacob went and did that, and Rebekah made a coat with hairy sleeves, a neck that was hairy, animal hair that she put on it. She rubbed it in some animals so it would smell like animals, which tells you what Esau smelled like. And then she sent Jacob in with the food, and he went in and said, Dad, I'm here. I'm your favorite son, Esau, here for the blessing. And, of course, Isaac said, well, you don't sound like Esau. Come here, son. Let me feel you. See if you really are. He did. Seemed like it was Esau. And so Isaac gave the blessing that had come to him from Abraham, and he was passing on to the next generation to Jacob. Now, at that time, everybody believed that if you said the blessing out loud, it was real. There was no written contract. When you said something verbally, it became real stuff. You couldn't put it away. So once Isaac had given the blessing to Jacob, that's the way it was going to be. There was no other thing about it. So Jacob got the blessing. He went out dancing. He went out celebrating with his mom. And then in came Esau. Dad, I'm here. Your favorite son Esau, here to get the blessing. And of course, Isaac says, well, I already gave it to you once. And then they begin to figure everything out. They realize what's going on. And they figure out that it has been Jacob who was pretending to be Esau. And so Esau becomes really angry. He leaves the tent in a rage. And then he goes around to all of his servants and he begins practicing what he's going to say to Jacob when he sees him. He goes to one servant and picks him up by the lapels and pulls him up to his face and says, Jacob, if I ever see your face again, I'll kill you. And threw him down. Went to the next one. Jacob, if I ever see your face, I'll kill you. Boom. Jacob, if I ever see your face, I'll kill you. On and on he went, telling everybody he could think of that if he ever saw Jacob's face again, Jacob was going to die. Well, Rebekah got wind of that, and it occurred to her that maybe this was a good time for Jacob to go on a vacation somewhere. she talked to Jacob about it, said, Jacob, you know that crazy woman that Esau married that's just driving us crazy? We don't want anything like that. Why don't you go get a wife? Go back up to Haran, where my brother Laban lives, and find one of his daughters and marry one of them, and life will be fine. It might be a good time to leave. Well, Jacob understood that maybe it was time to just not leave home for a little while, but maybe forever. You know, coming home was not going to be a good thing as long as Esau was alive. And he took off. But here's the thing. Jacob had gotten the birthright. He had gotten the blessing. He had won every victory there was to win. He'd gotten everything he had ever wanted. And yet, he was leaving town with his tail between his legs, as if he had lost it all. I don't know, you ever been there where you strive and strive and strive to get something that you've wanted all the time, and then when you finally get it, you realize it wasn't what you thought it should be, and it's not the way working out the way you wanted, and you feel like a failure instead? Jacob, as it turns out, got here, and he felt like he had done everything wrong. He left town, no servants, no animals, no property, no people. He walked out of town by himself. Alone, feeling like a loser. He went on his way toward Haran, and after he'd gone for a couple of days, he spent one night in a place all by himself. He laid down, he put his head on a rock to use it as a pillow. This was really a great life he was living now. All of a sudden, he began to dream. And we heard about this dream in the scripture that Gwen read just a little bit ago, where the ladder came out of heaven and it reached the earth and it went all the way into heaven. And then there were angels that were ascending and descending on the ladder. And all of a sudden it appeared that Jacob could actually go up that ladder and get all the way into heaven if he wanted to. But instead, what happens is it seems like God came down the ladder, because we hear it said that the Lord stood beside him and said, Jacob, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and now for you, I am going to give you this land. Your generations will be like the dust on the earth, uncountable. You will have everything. I am going to give it all to you, Jacob. And I promise you this, I will stay with you through everything. I will not leave you until I've provided you with everything I have promised. Wow. That was an eye-opening experience for Jacob, as it would be for you and for me. Here he was, having left, seeming to be a failure, thinking that he should have gotten a blessing from Abraham to Isaac and now to himself, and then suddenly realizing, well, that was nothing. Look at this one. This is one that came exactly and entirely from God right here, standing in his midst, standing right next to him, offering him this promise. And so Jacob, it was like his life had been transformed. He built a little altar there, and he said, surely, this is the house of God. God is in this place, and I didn't know it. But then he took it a step further, further than anybody else had ever taken it. Abraham had had some experiences like that. Isaac a little bit, but Abraham had been the kind of person who, if God said do something, he did it. If God didn't say something, he didn't do it. If God wanted something, he gave it. If God didn't ask for it, he didn't bother to offer any more. Isaac was, you remember, the guy that just kind of let life happen to him, and whatever happened, happened, and it was fine as far as he was concerned. But here was Jacob taking the next step, because he said to himself, you know, I am here with nothing. So if God is willing to give me simply bread to eat and clothes to wear, that'll be enough. I will assume God has provided me all that I need to have. And I will give back a tenth of everything God has given to me. It's the first time we really hear about somebody making a decision that they're not just receiving a covenant from God, but that they're giving back in return. That somehow this covenant that comes to us is worthy of not just accepting it, but also is worthy of our joy and our generosity, that we want to be giving people. It is what we have learned become one of the basic Christian tenets, right? The disciples of Jesus learned the same thing, that we don't just receive the grace of God, we don't just receive that relationship, but we're called then to live it out, to give it back, to share it with others. And it all starts right here with Jacob. The faith is suddenly taking a significant step forward. And so it is. And so Jacob then went on his way to Haran. And because of time, the next section of the story, which is pretty long, is going to get short. So go back and read this Genesis if you want to, about 28 through 32, somewhere in there, if you want to get this part of the story. But let's put it this way. Jacob went to Haran. He met Laban, his uncle, Uncle Laban. And then he met daughter Rachel, and he fell in love with Rachel. He wanted to get married to Rachel. He went to Laban and said, I want to marry Rachel. Laban said, great, you can marry Rachel. Here's the deal. You work for me for 7 years, then you can marry my daughter. Seemed like a short time for Jacob, 7 years for a beautiful wife that he was going to have. Seemed like a good idea. And so he did that. 7 years passed. Jacob went back to Laban and said, 7 years have passed. Time for the wedding. Laban said, fine, let's have a wedding. So they had a wedding, and when the wedding was over, Jacob awakened the next day and realized that he had not married Rachel, but he had married her sister, Leah, older sister, Leah. That wasn't what he thought the deal was. He went to Laban and said, what's the deal, Laban? Laban said, well, you know, Rachel's my second daughter, but Leah's my firstborn. You got to marry my first one before you can marry the second one. So here's what we'll do. Work out your honeymoon here with Leah, and then you can go ahead and marry Rachel, but you have to promise to work for me another 7 years. 14 years is what it took to marry Rachel. Now, some of you are thinking, he's marrying Leah, he's marrying Rachel. That's not the way it's supposed to work. Well, there's also two other handmaidens that get involved in all this. And so there's four of them that are there in the family. And I'm not going to go there, all right? You just figure that out for yourself, how that's going to work out. But it turns out with about 13 kids, 12 of them being boys, and if you want to read how the first 12 children are born, read the 30th chapter of Genesis, because it's all the women involved together. But anyway, for the 14 years now, Jacob has worked, and all he's gotten out of it is a big family. All these kids and four women to whom he has this relationship going. And he has nothing, no property, no resources. So he works out another deal with Laban and says, let me manage your herd. And if you let me manage your herd this time, and then for pay, you'll give me a little bit of your herd at a time. Then when we, you know, after a few years, I'll have my own livestock and I'll have my own family. Laban said, great. Well, now, we saw that Laban had been a trickster kind of person, right, in what he did to Jacob. They come from the same family, right? I mean, Laban was a brother of Rebekah, who was the mother of Jacob. They're all the same genetics here, so they're both tricksters. We've already heard about Jacob some. Well, what Jacob was doing was selective breeding. He was an agriculturalist from the very beginning. Lots of firsts with Jacob. And so he would breed the stock so that the healthy stock he would breed into his herd, and the weak animals he would breed into Laban's herd, so that after 6 years, Jacob had this wonderfully large and healthy set of livestock, and Laban had this weakling runt kind of livestock. How do you think that made Laban feel? Jacob began to realize that just like he had run out of town once, it was time to run out of town again. Gathered up his family. They left in the middle of the night. He got all of his livestock, took it with him. Of course, traveling by that way is a little slow, and so Laban did not take long to catch up to him. They had this big argument, a lot of negotiation. There's more there than I can tell you right now, but let's leave it with the solution. They put a pile of rocks right here, and Laban said, I will never go past this pile of rocks in your direction to do you harm. And Jacob said, I will never cross this pile of rocks in your direction to do you harm. In other words, in both cases, I don't want to see your face again. We are never going to see each other again. You go your way, I'll go mine. Okay, so here's the problem. You ever heard of a rock in a hard place? Well, here's the rocks, right? Jacob can't go past this pile of rocks. Well, the hard place is back home where Esau is waiting for him, right? Who Esau doesn't ever want to see his face again, or what's going to happen? He's going to kill him, right? And so Jacob is caught in the middle, and there's nowhere to go except he's got to go. So he sends out some servants hoping that maybe Esau has died or something, and says, go see if you can find Esau. And so they go out, and then they come back, and they say, oh, by the way, we found Esau. Oh, okay, so what's the deal? Well, he's coming this way, and he's got 400 men with him, and they're riding as fast as they can come. That doesn't sound like good news to me, right? So Jacob began thinking, all right, so what I've got to do here is I'm going to get gifts to Esau before he meets me. So he put a bunch of animals, you know, a herd and a flock and a whatever a group of camels is, and one company at a time, and the first one was supposed to go to Esau, and when Esau saw it, he would say, what's this? And the servant would say, this is a gift to Esau from your servant Jacob. He wants you to have this. And then Esau would come along to the next one, and the servant would say, this is a gift to Esau from your servant Jacob, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until maybe it would soften Esau up a little bit, and maybe getting the gifts would be, you know, what he would want. And then that night, Jacob set his family across the river, and he laid down by himself because he wanted to pray. And that night, his prayer was a very significant prayer. He said, God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and now the one who has given me the promise, you have done everything I could ever have asked. When I came here, I had nothing but my staff. Now I have got two companies of people and animals and livestock. You have provided me with everything. You have done everything that you ever wanted to say you were going to do for me. But I am not worthy to receive any of it. And yet this is what you said you would do. And so, since you've given it to me, in spite of who I am, I ask that you would deliver me from my brother Esau, because I'm afraid of him. I think he's going to kill me. And then he tried to go to sleep, and he began to roll back and forth, one of those sleepless kind of nights, and he started struggling back and forth on his pillow that was a rock, and it wasn't very good, and all that kind of thing. And then before long, he began to realize he wasn't just wrestling with himself. He was wrestling with some stranger who had shown up, and they wrestled all through the night. Finally, about daybreak, Jacob said, the stranger said to Jacob, he said, what is your name? And Jacob said, my name is Jacob. And the stranger said, ah, you were Jacob, but no longer. Now you will be called Israel, because you have striven with God and with human beings, and you have prevailed. And Jacob said, well, what is your name? And the stranger said, well, why do you ask me my name? As if to say, isn't it pretty obvious that I'm God? And then the stranger left. And Jacob said, I have seen the face of God here in this place. I have seen the face of God because I have struggled with God and my life has been spared. And all was good with God. But there was still a problem, right? Because the next morning, Esau was going to be showing up. And it seemed okay to think that you had solved your problem with God, but what about that person that's going to come and kill you? So Jacob continued to be afraid. He went across the river the next morning, gathered his family together, set them in their positions, and he got in front of them, and he began walking in the direction of Esau to face the future that was coming his way. Soon Esau came riding in on his horses with his 400 men in his direction. And finally, when Esau got close enough that they could recognize each other in a sense, Jacob stopped, got down on his knees, entered into a position of seeking mercy. Esau climbed down off of his horse, ran up to where Jacob was, picked him up by the lapels, pulled him up tight, looked him in the face, and then embraced him and called him brother. All was forgiven. The two were made one again. Neither of them wanted what the other one had. They belonged to each other. So that Jacob finally said, Esau, to see your face is to see the face of God. Because as it turns out, the face of God is not a face of wrath or anger or fear. The face of God is a face of love, grace, forgiveness, compassion. So as you look around this morning to the neighbor next to you, across from you, behind you, the face of God is yours to see. The face of God is yours to be.